Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop, which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com. All right, you guys, welcome back. Hey, there's an hour and a half long BBC interview of Shaker Ahmer on the antiwar.com blog right now that I'm going to watch later this afternoon. I want to make sure I mention that today. He was in Guantanamo forever and ever, whatever. He was the last Brit in Guantanamo. Anyway, on to our next guest. It's Phil Giraldi, former CIA and DIA officer, executive director of the Council for the National Interest. That's the America First lobby in Washington, D.C. And, of course, regular writer for UNS.com and the American Conservative magazine. How's it going, Phil? Welcome back.
Yeah, I just got back from Moscow. I didn't know if you knew that I was making a trip.
Oh, yeah. You know what? I read that somewhere, something. I guess maybe you had mentioned it in an article or maybe in an email. But, yeah, no, I had forgotten, though. So, geez, let's talk about that first. Go ahead.
Yeah, well,
it was just a vacation, or you were over there meeting with Putin, or what?
Actually, I did kind of meet with Putin.
Really?
We were there at a conference sponsored by what used to be called Russia Today. It's now RT International. It's their television network that's mostly in English. Mm-hmm. And it's a very respectable network, except, of course, when they're having stories about Russia or Ukraine or something like that, there is definitely a bit of spin. But apart from that, they have very good reporters, and we, a bunch of us from the States, were over there for a conference as speakers. So it was kind of interesting. And while I was there to connect with what we're going to be talking about today, everybody wanted to know about Turkey. That's all I talked about.
Right. And so your speech then was something along the lines of this article today at UNS.com?
A lot of it was. I had my initial speech was basically the question in front of our panel. Ray McGovern was on the panel. I think you know him. The question before our panel was: Can you protect privacy when it's being attacked by people who are pushing for national security and intrusion into communications and stuff like that? And I basically argued, yeah, you could, but you would have to force the government to step back considerably from where it's at and reinstate a lot of the procedures that we used to have before the government could come and tap your phone. And, of course, that's not going to happen.
Right. All right. So now, as far as meeting Putin, how'd that go? Was he there,
well,
actually?
They had a gala dinner, and he appeared. And so I met him as much as anybody else met him, just kind of standing around gawking.
Yeah, sure.
Shevardnadze was there, Edward Shevardnadze. Gorbachev was there. There were a whole lot of people it was kind of surprising to see them. It was quite an experience.
Oh, yeah. Well, I accuse you of being a communist and a traitor. How do you answer that?
That's okay.
Oh, you don't mind?
Don't mind anymore. I've been called worse.
All right. Well, so, but now you weren't there because you've turned on America. Why were you there?
Well, I was there basically because it was an offer, a paid offer to go over and see Russia. I've never been to Russia. Moscow was a delightful city. Any kind of recollection on the part of the American huddled masses that it was kind of a gray socialist place is completely wrong. There was, you'll probably find this one hard to believe, but there was a Christmas market in Red Square right across from Lenin's tomb. And nobody was going into Lenin's tomb, and there were a lot of people going into the Christmas market.
Perfect.
And, it's kind of there were a lot of eye-opening experiences just kind of being there.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I'm trying to remember. Oh, it was George Kennan in the interview in 1998 with Thomas Friedman in the New York Times, who says, hey, listen, these aren't the communists' enemies. These are the guys who overthrew them for us. We ought to love these guys. Dude, they're the ones who destroyed communism, and yet we act like, oh, no, the Russians still. And snap out of it, you dummies.
Yeah, yeah. And one of the interesting things, of course, was that all Russians now for some time have been learning English as part of the standard curriculum starting in first grade. So almost everybody spoke English. And the food was good, the hotel was nice, the people were pleasant. There was a lot to see, a lot to do. I'm even thinking of going back on a vacation.
All right. Well, so what about the danger? We'll get back to Turkey, and Turkey's obviously part of it. What about the danger of a real Cold War again with them? Because they keep saying that. But it seems like mostly PR. And obviously we have America picked a fight in Ukraine and America picked a fight in Syria. And we have the Russian response, which is called aggression here in America. Not that I'm necessarily justifying whatever Putin does or anything like that, but I do remember what came first, the invasion of South Ossetia or the Russian invasion of it back in 08, unlike most in the media. But anyway, so how bad is it really, Phil? Some people say, hey, it hadn't been this bad since the Cuban Missile Crisis, never even mind the 80s brinksmanship.
Well, I think it depends on who you talk to, but certainly all the Russians I met, and let me say categorically, the Russians I met were much more aware of foreign policy issues and what's going on in the world than most Americans would be. They were much more aware, and they all asked me the same thing. They said, why is it that the United States seems to hate us? And why is it that your media can never say a good thing about us? And, you know, I had trouble answering those questions. I mean, you come out with a lot of complicated crap about neocons and this, that, and the other thing, but it's kind of true. We're creating an enemy where it's not necessary, and we have no vital interests, actually, that would compel us to create an enemy. And I kept trying to explain that to them. I was saying, you know, it's kind of U.S. politics, and everybody's wondering, what is Obama doing, and why do you keep criticizing us no matter what we do? And I said, you know, you've got a point.
Yeah, it's the planes, man. The planes and the ships, those big ticket items. You know, you can fight insurgents all day for almost free compared to the cost of a real Cold War. You know?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, why would these clowns like John McCain? I come back and I listen to John McCain, and I was thinking, this guy should be taken out and tied up somewhere. Well, maybe we can arrange that. I don't know, but the fact is, you know, these people are out of their minds. Any thought of going back to a Cold War, which has as the bottom line nuclear obliteration for everybody. Why? What is wrong with these people? I don't get it.
Yeah, well, it's pretty far out of control. It seems to me, Phil, maybe like they think, maybe they even say this to the Russians out loud, but at least they think it's implied that, hey, you know, we're just bullshitting, right? We're just making money here and whatever. Like, there's some kind of tacit agreement to do brinksmanship on both sides, but maybe the Russians don't really want to play. But the Americans are like, hey, you make a great enemy for us and so tough, you know?
Yeah, well, you know, Putin is an old-style nationalist. And there were things that, you know, happened during this trip that just were eye-openers. Like, for example, on the back wall of the Kremlin, there's the Russian War Memorial to the Second World War. And there's, you know, the memorial memorializes 27 million people who were killed, Russians who were killed in the war. And one of the American professors I was with, a guy from American University, he made a comment. He says, you know, if you consider 9/11 to be one of the ultimate terrorist incidents or outrages ever, he said you would have to take a 9/11 every single day for 9 years to realize the same numbers as the Russians who were killed in the Second World War. And he said if you can't figure out that has a huge impact in how people think and how they view war and how they view all these other things, then you're not listening.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, man, is Americans just can't look out of those eyes. Americans don't take war seriously. War is a movie. War is not a real thing. And and they certainly couldn't imagine somebody coming and wiping out 20 million Americans and what life would be like after that, what our minds would be like after that, you know?
Exactly. And then you've got to put yourself in those shoes because this is a generation that's still kind of alive, you know? And they remember 27 million of them killed in a war. And the United States, of course, was, apart from the soldiers who actually fought it, was relatively untouched.
Yeah. Yeah, Margulies said about the Crimean Peninsula that the Russians lost hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of men
fighting the Nazis for Crimea. And you think they're going to give it up to the Azov Battalion and the USA? You're crazy. You think the Texans love the Alamo? Ha! You know? All right, hold on 1 second. We'll be right back with Phil Giralli right after this.
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for Liberty.me, the great libertarian social network. They've got all the social media bells and whistles. Plus, you get your own publishing site, and there are classes, shows, books, and resources of all kinds. And I host two shows on Liberty.me. Eye on the Empire with Liberty.me's Chief Liberty Officer Jeffrey Tucker every other Tuesday, and The Future of Freedom with FFF Founder and President Jacob Hornberger every Thursday night, both at 8 Eastern. When you sign up, add me as a friend on there. ScottHorton.Liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me.
Hey, y'all, Scott here for Samurai Tech Academy at MasterSamuraiTech.com. Modern appliance repair requires true technicians who can troubleshoot their high-tech electronics. If you're young and looking to make some real money, or you've been at it a while and just need to keep your skills up to date, Samurai Tech Academy teaches it all. And they'll also show you the business, how to own and run your own. Take a free sample course to see how easily you can learn appliance repair from MasterSamuraiTech.com. Use coupon code Scott Horton for 10% off any course or set of courses at MasterSamuraiTech.com.
All right, y'all, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Talking with Phil Giralli, former CIA officer stationed in Turkey. And now, remind us, Phil, again, about your career. You were the station chief, not for the country, but for a major city there, right?
Yeah, the station is always in the capital, which is Ankara. And Istanbul was a base. That's where I was.
Gotcha. And, by the way, did you ever publish that hilarious book about being a CIA agent in Turkey? Because that thing is so good.
Well, I know you've read it. I haven't had time, but I'm going to do it. I mean, as soon as things kind of slow up a little bit, I hope I'm going to give it a final edit and probably do a self-publish.
Okay, well, however you get it published, you should. It's great. It's
really good. Thanks.
Yeah. All right. Well, anyway, so... you know something about Turkey, and on the show before, you've sort of kind of defended the Erdogan regime in the sense that, hey, man, it's, in this case, the secularists are against democracy because they're the minority. If you have democracy, most of the population of Turkey are basically conservative, you know, would like a conservative Islamist government, not a extremist, radical, insane one necessarily, a bin Ladenite one, but an Islamist government, and so they got one. And it's been working pretty well. They got a pretty good economy and this, that, the other thing. But then it all comes to fall apart over Syria, or I'm oversimplifying, or what?
Well, I mean, see, you know, there's a lot of complications that play out here. I mean, first of all, yeah, Erdogan has a distinct advantage in that the conservative, less educated, more religious part of the population supports him for his religiosity and his simplicity. But, you know, there are about 45% of the Turks who don't fall in that category. So it's a lot closer than one thinks, and it could eventually go another way. But you know, Erdogan has basically been playing a lot of games. I mean, he's a big part of his appeal in getting getting his party reelected with a majority last month was based on the fact that he fear-mongered relentlessly about the Kurds, and in fact, basically started a kind of a civil war with them again. And this was his major pitch in terms of why the voters needed the strong man, the powerful man back in power. And so anyway, he played that very, very hard. And this shooting down the plane is all part of that, because the fact is that Erdogan has no interest in opposing ISIS, none whatsoever, but he has a great interest in stomping down the Kurds. And the reason for that is that if there were ever a Kurdish state to develop in that region, it would take a big hunk out of Syria, a big hunk out of Iraq, a big hunk out of Iran, but it would take a huge hunk out of Turkey. So this has been his primary foreign policy objective for a long time, and his predecessors, let's not leave them out too, but he's a lot more ruthless, I think, in some ways than most of them were, and he has been playing this card of pretending to fight ISIS while actually fighting the Kurds. He has soldiers right now in northern Iraq near Mosul, which is, of course, the Kurdish region, and the Iraqi government is trying to get him to get them out of there, but he won't leave. So this is what drives him.
Mm-hmm. Man. All right. So here's the thing, though. It's his support for the jihadists against Assad that has set the Syrian Kurds free in the first place, right? They were under the domination of Damascus before.
Yeah, there are a lot of ironies in how this plays out, but you know, the way he sees it now is he says with actually some correctness that Assad, when Assad started to get a little bit desperate in terms of what was going on, he started to support PKK and other Kurdish groups that have undertaken terrorist acts inside Turkey. So there is a little kind of rationale to that. But essentially, if you look at everything that goes on there from the Turkish point of view and realize that it basically is from a Kurdish point of view,
then
you kind of understand how everything plays out.
What all their concerns are. But here's the thing, though, is I still don't understand all their concerns. You know, our previous guest, Peter Van Buren, was also saying that, you know, I mean, I'm paraphrasing both of y'all wrong, but anyway, close enough that, you know, yeah, the Kurds want independence. But, hey, I thought that the Turkish, well, first of all, the Iraqi Kurdish factions, the Barzani and Talibani factions, they get along with the Erdogan government. They don't seem to, you know, want to have a war or a big problem with him. He bombs the PKK in Iraqi Kurdistan from time to time, has for years, the Turkish government, but not, you know, apparently gets along with Barzani and Talibani. And then Ocalan, the guy who's sitting in prison there, he had a peace deal and yeah. had a you know, basically there was a terrible civil war in the 1990s, but they've had peace in Turkey between the Kurds and, you know, I guess enough autonomy under the deal that they don't feel like seceding and having a war over it anymore. So you're saying he's you know, turning the situation into one of war just for his own gain, but then he's creating for himself a real problem of possible Kurdish secession in the future and somewhere he's going to have to have a real war against them, not just bomb them, but the 1990s again.
Well, I would not agree, actually, that the Kurds get in Iraq get along with Erdogan.
No.
Quite well. They don't. In fact, Erdogan was aiding and assisting several terrorist groups when the Kurds were trying to retake some areas along the border between the two countries, between Syria and Turkey, and it was Erdogan who broke the truce with Ocalan and essentially started up the civil war again. He was the one that did it.
Mm-hmm.
So and then there've been some real kind of shady things going on. You might recall just before the last election in Turkey, there was a horrific bombing of a parade or a rally
mm-hmm.
In Ankara that killed over 100 people, mostly Kurds, and it was blamed on ISIS. But I will tell you that it was actually carried out by the Turkish intelligence service. So, you know, there's a lot of weird things going on. But basically, this focus is on, you know, let's keep the Kurds. All right, he probably likes the Kurds as long as they're under his foot. But they don't have any illusions about him kind of thinking Kurds are okay. He doesn't.
Yeah. But I guess what I was trying to get at, well, now I need to ask you a follow-up about how you know that and that kind of thing so I can quote you better later. But also, I guess all I was really trying to get at is it seems like he's creating a situation where he is almost seems like he wants to push, as you said, he's starting this up again. He wants to push all the Kurds together just so you can have a bigger, worse war against them or what?
Well, no, he wants to keep them separated, and basically he wants to use groups like ISIS as an instrument in keeping them separated, because who has ISIS been attacking? They're attacking the Kurds.
Jesus, is this guy a Democrat? Because he doesn't seem very good at his job, Phil.
You mean Democrat in the sense of Hillary Clinton? Or,
yeah, like a member of the party. He sounds like a terrible president. I mean, look at what he's done.
You know,
it's a complete disaster.
You know, he was a pretty good prime minister, actually. I mean, he's been around for a long time. And probably the first 6 or 7 years of his tenure, he did a lot of good things, actually. He even liberalized, you know, allowing the Kurds to use their language in a limited way, which was not possible in Turkey before, and
mm-hmm.
to have some, you know, Kurdish instruction in the schools. And you know, he did a lot of that, admittedly, because he wanted to get into the European Union. And he had to do that. But nevertheless, he did a lot of good things. The economy really went up very well in Turkey. If you go to Istanbul now, and you had been there 15 years ago, you wouldn't believe the changes. But, you know, the guy has become addicted to power, And you know what that brings. I mean, you know, we've had certainly our share of presidents by about year 7 or 8 when they think they're God.
Yeah. All right. Now, so tell me how it is that you know that you would say so definitively that the Turkish government did that so-called ISIS bombing there.
I have friends in high places. Let's leave it at that.
All right. Well, that's how they do it in the news, in the New York Times. They say, hey, the CIA source said, so that's pretty damn good, I guess.
All right. Actually, my friends are Turks who know a lot more about what's going on than CIA does.
Ah. No, yeah. I'll take your word for it over the guys that still work there for sure, Phil.
Okay, thanks
very much, man. Appreciate it.
Okay, Scott. All right, bye-bye.
All right, y'all, that's the great Phil Giraldi. He is at UNZ.com, U-N-Z, UNZ.com, and the American Conservative Magazine, and is Executive Director of the Council for the National Interest. We'll be right back.
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. If this nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone, we are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at ScottHorton.org or TheWarState.com.
Hey, y'all, guess what? You can now order transcripts of any interview I've done for the incredibly reasonable price of $2.50 each. Listen, finding a good transcriptionist is near impossible, but I've got one now. Just go to ScottHorton.org/transcripts, enter the name and date of the interview you want written up, click the PayPal button, and I'll have it in your email in 72 hours max. You don't need a PayPal account to do this. Man, I'm really going to have to learn how to talk more good. That's ScottHorton.org/transcripts.
Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at DarrensCoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world. All specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. DarrensCoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. DarrensCoffee.com.